But grab a Bible and let's open together to Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians 6. Appreciate so much the kind invitation to be with you tonight. Thank you for being here. And thank you to Jonathan for those kind words. I don't want to get too much into that personal stuff because I have some things to say here that I know are more than what I have time for. So I'm going to do the best I can to go through what I have to say that I think will be a blessing to us tonight. But I appreciate you inviting me in this opportunity to be with you and to share something that is my passion. Ephesians 6 and verse 4 says, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." Don called me and asked me to come and talk about something that I was passionate about. And home is my passion. It is my passion in my life to focus on the family that God has blessed me to have. And it is my passion to help other people as they, as Christian disciples, focus their attention on what they're doing in their home lives. Because to me, it seems this is the most important thing that we can do. I know that I am a preacher of the gospel, but I feel in many ways that my preaching of the gospel is work done at home, and that my work done at home helps me in preaching the gospel to others that I don't know. And it seems to me that this is something that is essential for disciples of Jesus to listen and think about as we engage in marriage and in raising children, and we try to have homes that honor our God. I want to talk to you for a minute about building house rules, because the idea that I want to talk about tonight is that it may benefit us to take some time and set down what we think, what Scripture teaches, should be some of the foundational principles of our home. That it's important for us to name those principles. As you'll see throughout the lesson, there are some things that you need to say and put a name to and say, this is what we're doing and this is who we are and this is what we're going to be. Very often, our parenting and our marriages are sort of done by the seat of our pants. And we just sort of say, you know what? What crisis comes up today, we'll deal with today. And then we collapse at the end of the day and we're just exhausted and we say, well, tomorrow will be a new day with new challenges and we'll figure it out then. But isn't there a place for us to say, wait, what really matters? To step back and say, where are we headed? What are we trying to do and build? And I want us to think about that for a few minutes tonight. I want to talk to you about why homes matter, and I want to just give you a few reasons here. I know you've probably heard thousands of sermons and talks about the home, and I just want to remind you why this is relevant for you and me. First, homes are habit incubators. If you are someone who is even a slight bit older than me, I will probably address you tonight as ma'am or sir. It's not personal. I do that with everybody, and the reason is, my mom went on a relentless, at least 18-year campaign to make sure that whenever I addressed any adult, the word that came out was followed with ma'am or sir. I was preaching in Boston a couple of years ago, and I was talking to one of the older sisters there, and she talked to me for a minute, and she kind of looked at me like this, and she said, "You're not from here, are you?" And I said, oh no, my Texas twang has come out. You know, I does that sometimes when I get excited or I get tired or something. And I said, well, how did you know? She said, we don't say ma'am up here. She said, we just say yeah. And so I say, thank you, Mom. That's Mom. Mom made me have a habit I would not have had it not been for her guidance and really very intentional correction. There are words that we say and don't say. You have them, even now, if you are an adult. Habits that began many years ago by the things that you learned and didn't learn in your home. Habits about things that we do and don't do. The kinds of movies we watch and don't watch. The kinds of things we drink or don't drink. The kinds of attitudes we have about people. Habits. Habits formed day after day, year after year, by contact with those closest to us in the home. Those are habits that we form with our children, and they are also habits that we form with our mates, because marriages have habits too, don't they? Where we get used to the same patterns of communication. Do we deal with our problems, or do we just let things go, slide them under the rug, give them the cold treatment? What do? We have habits that are formed in our home, and I am suggesting that there may be a place to question the habits and be intentional about forming habits that we know are going to honor God And that's what I want to challenge you to do tonight. Second, homes are growth engines. It's an amazing thing. I have my son with me tonight, who is taller than me and has been for a couple of years now, which is a way to get to humility really easily, is to watch your son sprint up past you. I remember when he was this big. Isn't it an amazing thing to watch your children grow? But it's not just physical, it's spiritual, it's emotional. It's amazing that children can't feed themselves or talk to you, and then in a few years, they're considering the rest of their lives, they're considering their faith in Jesus. Growth happens, and it happens primarily at home. This is where we grow. And I want to focus your attention on the idea that at home is where spiritual growth happens. Things are happening every day in our homes. Which direction are they headed in? Are they going for good or for evil? And so there are a lot of proverbs that focus on the urgency of helping kids grow now. Discipline your son, for there is hope. Proverbs 19, 18. Discipline your son, and he will give you rest. Proverbs 29, 17. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. You've heard the sayings, like children are like trees. You know, you can bend them while they're young, but at some point they harden and they become what they are. Or children are like wet cement. You can ride in them for a little while, but then they harden and they become who they are. The idea here is that they are going to grow in these pivotal years, and if we're not investing the right things in them and teaching them the right things, then they're going to grow in a way that is not going to be a blessing to them. And marriages help us grow too. Gary Thomas wrote this book called Sacred Marriage. Any situation that calls me to confront my selfishness has enormous spiritual value. And I slowly began to understand that the real purpose of marriage may not be happiness as much as it is holiness. Think about it. Marriage changes you. Sometimes it changes you for the worse, but sometimes it changes you for the better and forces you to face yourself and say, I'm not as selfless as I thought I was. I thought I had that temper under control, but she can really get under my skin. And as we grow, the question becomes, are we growing in Jesus' directions? Or are instead we growing further away? Homes are hypocrisy revealers. If you want to know a person, really know them, there are some people that know them inside and out. There's no faking. They know exactly what that person thinks and feels and what their faith really is. Talk to their family. Talk to their wives or husbands. Talk to their children, and you'll know. We get all dressed up for church. And we show our best side to everybody, and we smile, and we say, oh, everything's going great, even when it's not going great. And we put on a facade, and then we get in the car, and we let loose. Here's how we're really doing. Here's how angry we really are. Here's how deep our faith really runs. Homes are hypocrisy revealers, and I want to suggest to you that if we want to do irreparable damage in our homes, then we will be hypocritical. Show one face to the world and our true face to our families. Homes will show you that. And then there are children and there are spouses that grow up in that environment. And finally, homes feed societies. I keep having the same conversation with a lot of my brethren. It's a conversation that goes like this. Well, everything is terrible right now in the world. Can you believe what's happening in our world? Oh, politics and this and society and this. Usually it's happening, you know, we just had Pride Month, and so there's a lot of that talk. And there is always a helpless tone in these conversations, like, well, the world's falling to pieces, but what can you do? I mean, what can we do? And my answer is, you can build awesome homes. That's what you can do. Do you know that if you build an awesome home, you will change the world? It starts like this. You have an awesome marriage. You know one of those marriages that people say, wow, 50 years, 60 years? People don't stay married that long anymore. And you change that little piece of the world. You raise children who know the Lord, who are sincere in their faith. And what happens is those children go into their schools. Those children go into their workplaces. Those children, maybe they go off to a university. Those children then become a new generation of people who can influence others, who can influence others, who can influence others. And when I invest in my family, I change the world. I told you a minute ago that home is a passion for me. My wife and I are both children of divorce, and this has been near and dear to our hearts. My wife's parents divorced when she was very young, 3 or 4 years old. My parents divorced when I was 9. Both of us know what it is to have a broken home. And I'm sure that there's some in this audience tonight that come from a broken home, or maybe you're experiencing a broken home right now. And there is a hole that is hard to describe if you have not experienced it. When my wife and I talked to the man who married us, we asked him, how can we make this last? Because when you come from a broken home, and studies show this about children of divorce, there is a statistical expectation that your home will end in divorce as well, because children of divorce tend to divorce. And we didn't want that. We also had never seen husbands and wives working together in a home in a healthy way. And it's really hard to walk by faith in that way and to do something that you've never seen. So we got to work and we did the best we could. And I want to tell you what motivated me. And I want to present this in terms of these house rules that we're going to talk about. I have noticed that there are a number of Christians who have great faith and poor home lives, whose marriages seem super unhappy, ships passing in the night, whose kids are out of control. And as I thought about that, and I thought about my past, and I thought about what are the chances that we're going to be able to succeed in this, I wasn't trying to criticize anyone. I was just terrified that we were going to be like that. So, we identified some rules for our home. And I want to suggest, I'm just going to throw these on the board. I want to suggest that you don't need to take these rules and make them yours. You can come up with your own rules, provided that they're biblical rules, rules that come from God's Word. These are the ones that have formed our home. And these are the ones that I believe I can prove from Scripture and I believe are important personally and viscerally to me, and I've tried to teach in my own family. The list is something like this. First is home is a safe place, which we'll talk about for a minute tonight. Then all people deserve respect. We tell the truth, which is a statement of honesty. We speak with love. No gossip allowed in our home. We take responsibility, meaning we take responsibility for our things and also when we make mistakes. We deal with our problems. We're not going to be a family that lets things slide or shoves things under the rug. We're going to be a family that confronts one another and talks frankly with each other. We lead by serving. We're not going to be a group of people, either as parents or as members of our family, who are going to dominate each other. We control ourselves. This is a regular conversation we have in our home because we get out of control from time to time, especially eating, spending, you know, being lazy, watching too much TV, you know, the things that we all do. But it's a great way to frame that conversation when you bring it back into control. And then finally, just because you're angry doesn't mean you're right. That there is a difference between what makes you mad and what's truly deserving of our anger. And there has to be a space for us to question our anger. I'm not going to go over all of those tonight. I just want you to know this is the general thread of how we have tried to teach these things in our home. And what I'm suggesting with this list is that it may be positive for you and your home to take a minute and think about what matters most. What is valuable to me about having a list is that we have named our values. These things matter to us. And our kids know it. They know when they violate one of these rules. They know what it's called. They know why it's a problem. And then we can say, now let's fix that and move forward. So I want to say a little bit about how we build that, and then I want to talk about how home is a safe place. So the process here, how do you, you know, okay, you got a list of rules, so is that really helping anybody? Here is what I want to say the next step is. When you've decided these are the things that are going to be valuable to us, how do we build them? The first thing is I want to talk a lot about them. I want my kids to know and my wife to know these things matter. And then there is everyone has to follow them. Everybody. Nobody is exempt. Dad is not exempt. Mom is not exempt from the rules. We don't get to have different rules for parents than for kids. And that leads to you need to admit when you're wrong. I especially want to encourage parents who are hearing me tonight that there is a golden opportunity when you make a mistake, when you are not what you should be in whatever form, to apologize to your children, admit that you're not wrong, and show them this is what followers of Jesus do when we're wrong. This is what we do. Not what our kids do when they're wrong, but what we all do, because the rules apply to all of us. Build habits as soon as possible. Some of these are habits that you can build when your children are very small, especially the responsibility things. You know, responsibility can start very young. It can just be a very small responsibility. You probably don't want to give them the keys to the car or anything when they're 2 years old. But there is a power in showing this is how, as we get older, these rules are maturing with our children. Make major decisions by the rules. When you have a tough call to make, why not go to your principals? This is who we are. This is what we want to be. Now we have a big decision. Now we have a hard decision. Now we need to know, what should we do? What should we counsel our kids to do? What should we do in this marital situation? And so we go back to our rules. And probably the most important thing to me is bring passion and energy to home. I especially want to talk for a moment to our men. Sometimes we can get so focused on our work, and we pour all our energy and all our time and all our heart into our work, and then we come home and do nothing. We're all tapped out. I just want you to consider that maybe there's something wrong with that picture, where we're working harder outside our family than in our family, that we're working harder about things that aren't going to matter and last than at things that will. Think about that. Bring passion and energy to home. Let your family know this matters to you. So I hope that in talking about this, I am not putting myself out as some kind of great example of this. I fail regularly at all of these things. And my son is here. He'll say amen if I tell him it's okay to say that. I want you to know that any effort here is golden effort, and that we need to be working in our homes because the stakes are so high. So let's talk about that first rule. I want to spend some time with you thinking about how home is a safe place. Home is a safe place. Think about what comes to your mind when you hear the word home. I think for most of us, home is belonging and warmth and peace and comfort. We say, oh, I'd love to go home. Home is where we fit. Home is where we act like and think like, and usually we look like the people around us. That's what home is. But I want you to know that for many people, that's not what home is. That for many people, home is a place of terror. Home is a place of instability. Home is a place of contention and hostility. Home is a place where mom is never satisfied and where dad is stumbling home drunk and we don't know who he's going to hit tonight. Home is a miserable marriage where there's no hope for any future. Home is a perpetually fault-finding mate. That's what home is for many people. In fact, I suspect there are people in this building right now who, when I say home, they don't get warm fuzzies, because for them, home is not safe. And I want to suggest to you that that does tremendous damage. For children who grow up feeling that no place is safe, if home is not safe, where are they safe? For spouses who feel like, I don't know if I can be honest in this home because honesty gets me beaten. The damage is incalculable. Christian homes must be different. Home is a safe place. I want to talk to you about some of that safety idea Look again at Ephesians 6:4. Ephesians 6:4 says, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. Do you hear in that that Paul is saying there's a potential for fathers, I think parents generally, but he specifies fathers, to treat their children in such a way that their children are spurred on to anger. They have provoked them. Turn the page over to Colossians 3. There's something similar, Paul says, to the Colossians here. Colossians 3 and verse 21. He says, "Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged." Discouraged. You can provoke your children to anger, and you can provoke your children to discouragement. So hear me out. Everybody is accountable for their own actions. I am, my children are, everyone is. But he says there are ways as parents we can make our children so angry. We have provoked them. We can discourage them. And in a way, it is our fault. Now, they're going to have to deal with the damage of that. They're going to have to deal with, what do I do with my anger and my discouragement? But it is our fault as parents. That's what he's saying. We have not made home safe. We have made home a place of provocation. I'll give you a couple of stabs at what I think may be the provoking here. When we parent our children so that our children don't know what's allowed and what's forbidden, we frustrate them. When we discipline out of anger or embarrassment, parents, have you ever been somewhere where you were embarrassed by how your children were acting and it made you lash out? I've done it in church buildings. When we are violent, our children may cower right now, but the time will come when either they will lash back or else they will deal with the anger and resentment for the rest of their lives. Paul says, parents are at fault. They have not made home safe. Fathers, do not provoke your children. Then he says, Colossians 3 and verse 19, look up over a couple of verses here. Colossians 3:19, "Husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them." Do not be harsh with them. Isn't it interesting that Paul is singling out certain behaviors and saying this is off limits? Paul is talking about making home safe. But it's long before it was cool. It's not the way we talk about it back in the ancient world. This is unique. He is saying this is not the way husbands and wives should have a relationship, where the wife is living in terror of the husband because he is so harsh. Have you also noticed that in all of these passages we've discussed, he is singling out men? That men are the ones who provoke their children, and men are the ones who are too harsh with their wives? Turn back to Ephesians 5 with me. When he talks to husbands in Ephesians 5, he says, Ephesians 5:25, "Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church." You hear in that the tenderness of that picture. He says in verse 25, "Love your wives as Christ loved the church." But I think the image that takes the cake here is, you know how you treat your own body? You don't actively harm yourself. You don't put yourself in harm's way. You're not harsh with your body. You nourish and cherish it. And so he says, you treat your wife that way. One more, 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter 3, we're really just laying the groundwork here for the idea of safety in home in the New Testament. 1 Peter 3 and verse 7, it says, "Likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered." Show honor to your wife. Live with her in an understanding way. They are heirs with you of the grace of life. The word understanding is fascinating here. It has those dual meanings in English. You know, when you understand someone, there is some comprehension, you know, an awareness of that person. But there is also, we use the word understanding to mean we kind of give somebody the benefit of the doubt. You know, I understand. Or I'm going to deal with you with understanding. What I mean is, I'm going to do more than meet you halfway. I'm going to show extra kindness, extra grace to you. Because you're my wife. Husbands, love your wives and dwell with them with understanding. He also says there in verse 7, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel. I think it is impressive that he says this is the way husbands should treat their wives, not because, and I do not believe that the meaning here is that wives can't handle their husbands, that they're the weaker vessel. I think instead the meaning here is our wives shouldn't have to handle our anger. They shouldn't have to be afraid of us. That is not right. They should feel safe. So put all of that together. Fathers, do not provoke your children. Fathers, do not provoke your children. Do not be harsh with your wives. Nourish and cherish your wives. Live with her with understanding. Treat her as a weaker vessel. There is so much here that simply says, home should be safe. This is what God is calling us to. And I especially, again, want to emphasize, he is calling men to this. And saying, men, this is part of our role, probably because we are the ones who tend to be harsh, who tend to provoke, who tend not to understand, and who tend to not treat others with honor. There might be a whole nother series of sermons we could talk about wives and women as mothers and things like that, but you can tell there is a thread here Paul and Peter are concerned about, that homes are not safe because we're not making them safe. And so it is our job as disciples of Jesus to make our homes safe places. Can I flesh that out for you now for the rest of our time? What does it mean to have a safe place at home? I think you can hear there's some responses and treatment that are off limits. But I want to be a little more specific. First, home should be a place where we feel safe to speak. You should be able to say what you think and feel without being afraid at home. Honesty is very high priority for Christians. We're told to be honest. We're told to put away lying and speak truth with our neighbor. Jesus tells us, let your yes be yes and your no be no. But if honesty has any meaning, it has to be because we have the potential to be dishonest. Because we have the freedom to say yes or no or something else. And with that freedom comes the possibility that we will say the wrong thing, and yet home should be a place where we are safe to speak. In fact, I would say it this way. We don't build character in our spouses and in our children by terrifying them into saying the right thing. You say it or else. The idea is that everyone is safe to speak, and we work to convince each other of what is true and good, to speak like Jesus wants us to. Give you a couple examples of this, how this might play out in the home, being safe to speak. So here's little Jane, who's 5 years old, and she is beginning to tell time, and so she knows that it's time to go to bed when the clock says 8:30. And at some point, she thinks this is arbitrary, although she wouldn't use that word. She thinks this is arbitrary. Why 8:30? And so she says, Dad, why do I have to go to bed at 8:30? And Dad says, maybe he's busy doing something else. Dad says, stop complaining and do what you're told. So Jane's question is not answered or even entertained. And so what does Jane learn? Dad gets angry about bedtimes, don't know why. She's done something wrong. But most of all, she learns it's not safe to speak. Some things you can't say in this house. Or maybe it's that Tom is suspicious of his wife, because she's been spending a lot of time away. He's worried that she's been with some other man. And so He remembers the last time that he asked her about her behavior. She got very angry, yelled at him, accused him. And so he decides, you know, it's just not safe to ask her about what she's doing. I'll just try to catch her in the act. He learns it's not safe. So let me ask about your homes. Is everyone in your home free to say that they are upset or frustrated? Is there a place in your home, parents, for a question to be asked about a parental decision? Can husbands and wives frankly discuss an issue knowing that they're going to be heard, really heard? Or is your home one in which one person will brook no dissent, hog the spotlight, shout down all the opposition? Is it safe to speak? Is home a safe place? Now, in this sense, when we talk about being safe to speak, really this is about our reactions. How do we treat each other when someone says something that we don't like? When someone says something that's wrong? This is not to say that we can't correct or encourage or steer someone away something that they've said or done. It is to say that they need to have the ability to say it without harshness coming from others. Home is a safe place. Safe to speak. Home is a place where we should feel safe to fail. Go with me over to Luke chapter 22. Luke 22. This is kind of a difficult one. We know intellectually that we're going to make mistakes, and that in a home, we're all going to know about each other's mistakes. Sometimes those mistakes are what we would call sin. And so there is a fine line to walk here. When I say that we're safe to fail, I don't mean that we're encouraging failure. And we're saying, you know what, let's all sin and do wrong because it doesn't matter. We just want to be a safe place here. But there is a way that we can thread this needle that I think Jesus shows us in Luke chapter 22. When he talks to Peter, look in Luke 22 and verse 31. He says, "Simon, Simon, behold, Satan demanded to have you that he might sift you like wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned again, strengthen your brothers." Do you see the balance there? Is Jesus encouraging Peter to fail? No, he says, I know this is going to happen, Peter. But when you have returned, strengthen your brothers. Peter, you're still welcome here. You come back and I'll have you. When you have turned around, when you have fixed this problem, when you have made it out of the pit, strengthen your brothers. With Jesus, it is safe to fail. Now, you hear in that, don't you? I can already hear it. Wait a minute. Are we saying it's okay to sin? No. Jesus doesn't say it's okay to sin. Peter, it's okay. You can deny me all you want. I don't care. But there is something there, isn't there, that says even when I make a huge mistake, will these people still love me? Think about, parents, what it teaches our children. If we react in such a way that when someone makes a big mistake, they are just written off by our family. What does it communicate except that there are some things you can do that will make you stop loving them? Are they safe to fail? There's a lot more to say about that and a lot of subtle things to say that I don't have time to get into. But I want to encourage you, if our homes are safe to fail, that will mean something like this. I can't keep bringing up the hurtful thing that my wife said or did weeks or months or years ago. I can't brand my children with labels because of their failure. Labels like you're lazy or selfish or angry or rebellious. I can't define myself by my own mistakes, and I can't define other people by their mistakes. Is it safe to fail in your home? I'm especially impressed by the fact that we have a lot more patience with failure when our children are young or our marriages are new. You know, when you just start with the kids and, you know, they're throwing their food everywhere, okay, yeah, oh, look at that, that's kind of cute. But as the age goes up, so do the expectations and so do the responses. It's really cute when your new husband slurps his milk first week, right? What about the fifth year? What about the 15th year? Not so cute. Okay, less patience. What do we do when we make mistakes? Is home a safe place where we keep loving and forgiving and working with each other even after we fail? Home should be a place where we feel safe to learn. We've already talked about this a little bit. Fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and instruction, the discipline, the admonition of the Lord. And I want to stress to you that in the Jewish mind, this process involves questions. Have you noticed in your readings of the Old Testament how often God instructs his people by saying, "Let me tell you how to answer your kids' and grandkids' questions," over and over again? What do these stones mean to you? Oh, that was when God brought us over the Jordan. What are these Passover feasts? What does this mean to you? Why do we do this? Who are we? Questions. And questions are a reflection of how safe it is to learn in our homes. Is it safe to ask questions that might be not entertained, might be answered harshly? So, for example, parents of young children, you bring your kid to church, 4 years old. 4 year old has begun to notice that some things are different. When it's time to go to church, I have to wear these weird clothes. I have to come here and sit down and be quiet and still. And then for some reason, they pass around a cracker and juice, but I can't have any. It was kind of weird. And the more I ask about it, the more I get shut down. "Dad, can I have some?" "No." "Dad, why do we do this?" This is a golden opportunity to share your faith with your kids. What are you going to say? Just like those questions. What are these Passover feasts? What does this mean to you? So we sit here with our children in a building like this, and we say, "Here, this is what this means to me. This is what this bread means to me. This is what this fruit of the vine means to me. This is why I do what we do." It is a golden opportunity to not just share, "This is who we are," but also, "This is why I am who I am. This is where I come from, and this is why you are the way you are." What a beautiful thing. Yet, it seems to me that very often, we miss these opportunities because children's questions don't always come out right. They don't ask them like the slam dunk question, "What does this mean to you, Dad?" I just love the fact that children ask and ask and ask. And those questions are windows into their hearts. Are there dinosaurs in the Bible? Does God ever get sleepy? Great questions. That's what they're thinking about. Why are people so mean? Then they get older and they ask questions like, "Why are we so different from other families? What should I do for a career? Why did you guys get married?" All of them questions that show this is where they are thinking. This is what they care about. And our answers give us opportunities. So let me just say it this way. For all the time that Christian parents spend concerned about what we're teaching our kids, are we giving them enough? Are we teaching them the Bible? How are we working through it? Don't overlook the idea that questions give you an opportunity to teach. What are they asking? And how can you use that to share the gospel with them? So many opportunities may go by the wayside. Parents need vision here that's beyond the frustration of the moment. I know kids sometimes use questions so that they don't have to go to bed and stuff like that. I've been there too. But this is an opportunity to say, our home is a safe place to learn. So I want to encourage you, as you think about your home, that sometimes home can look different than what it should be. And we have a golden opportunity with this day to say, I want my home to be a safe place where love is shown, where we are free to speak, free to fail, and free to learn. Thank you so much for your attention tonight. I appreciate it.